shut up!
And we're dead. We have been taken over by a monster.
They hunt by sound. Over. I wouldn't last very much, very long in this reality.
We'll get into it. Nobody should. And we're back. Mike, and Oscar coming with you with a current event movie for your listening pleasure. The big one that hit all the weird and high and crazy unexpected box office numbers this past weekend.
Big hit.
A Quiet Place from Jim Halpert from The Office, staring into the camera, but this time he's got a little more at stake than just fooling Dwight.
Got a nice beard.
It's a great beard. I can't grow that kind of beard. I'm very jealous of him. So good for that. Working with his real life wife. That's a rhyming thing. Emily Blunt. It was John Krasinski's not his directorial debut. I guess he had a couple done before that. But yeah, he made a lot of money, got a lot of press, and now we're talking about potential Oscar type movies for an April release horror movie. But that's what we're doing today. Welcome once again to Mike, and Oscar. I am your host, Mike. This is my co-host, also Mike.
I'm also Mike. I'm tempted to whisper this entire episode, but just ignore the rules of engagement there.
I have so many questions about the rules of engagement, but we'll get into those as we go. Like we said at the top, this is a review of A Quiet Place. What we're going to be doing for this one is just taking a single shot review, much in the vein of our old Oscar Sprint profiles, and kind of go through this one step by step. We'll give you a spoiler section. We'll have the dance breakdown that you heard in our last episode with Annihilation, and then we'll go through the spoilers for A Quiet Place. So without any further ado, Michael.
Yeah, cast and crew, co-written, directed, and co-starring John Krasinski. Yes, that John Krasinski, Jim Halpert from The Office, like Mike said. This is Krasinski's third time directing a feature film after brief interviews with Hideous Men, which was a working title to our podcast.
Also, and damn it, you stole the joke from me.
I got you. I got him. I tried to say that without breaking.
Yeah, beat me to the punch. Nice job.
And then The Hollers. Krasinski's also directed three episodes of The Office, very Ron Howard-like. He was on a TV guy.
Certainly has the talent. He showed that in this movie.
A Quiet Place was also written by Brian Woods and Scott Beck, two relative unknowns that I'll talk about in a minute. The film stars Emily Blunt as Evelyn Abbott, as Mike said, Krasinski's real-life human wife.
Human being the emphasis, the word that yes. We want to...
And his character's wife as well. Lee Abbott is Krasinski's character, mm-hmm. And their kids are played by Millicent Simmons, Noah Jupe, and Cade Woodward.
Millicent Simmons was spectacular, I thought, in this.
She's actually deaf, which I'll get to in another minute. The writers, Beck and Woods, they grew up in rural Iowa together. These two writers were avid silent film watchers in college. They wrote a 15-page proof of concept, which got some traction in Hollywood, and then a spec script. They still had to write a spec script, which is, again, a script that they're writing on their own that is not commissioned and not paid. They originally shopped it as a Cloverfield sequel. Full circles all around here.
Yeah, everybody wants a piece of that Cloverfield pie for some reason. Can't imagine why.
Right. When Krasinski was attached, they kind of all wrote that screenplay together. They wrote another draft. Blunt and Krasinski just had their second child when he first read a draft of the script. She encouraged him to direct the project, and then after she read a forthcoming draft, she asked him if she can co-star with him in it.
Behind every good man is a woman who actually knows what the fuck is going on.
And who can sell your movie to the worldwide box office. Production notes. The film shot from May to November 2017 in Dutchess and Ulster counties in upstate New York. During production, they decided to record all the sound effects separate and magnify those sounds for the final movie, which we'll say kind of came out pretty well, I think. Millicent Simmons is actually a deaf actor, and she helped teach the rest of the cast sign language. They had some signers teaching the cast throughout, but she helped a lot throughout production.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. On Wikipedia, the profile for this movie, they say that the languages that this movie is in English and American Sign Language. That was kind of cool to see.
It was cool. So, yeah, that's all I got for production profile stuff, Mike. I'm pretty quick today.
Yeah, well, that's what she said. We're in a... It's a new movie. It just came out. We're recording this April 9th on a Monday. WrestleMania Monday, I should say.
How was it? Did it?
It was so long.
Oh, it was,
it
long?
Was like 8 hours.
It did started it fulfill at five. All your hopes and dreams?
The last three matches were garbage, but that's what I expected. I'm not a Nakamura guy.
I was kind of jealous of all you guys on Twitter because Twitter was loving it.
No, it was a plum.
Rowdy Roddy Rousey.
Close. Rowdy Ronda Rousey. That's not why we're here. Okay. A Quiet Place, like we said, we're recording this April 9th on Monday. It just came out April 6th, the previous Friday, so it's only been out for a couple days, but it's done damage. Brian Woods and Scott Beck get both story and screenwriting credits, like also Mike just told you, and Krasinski gets a screenwriting credit along with the directing credit. This debuted a month ago, March 9th, at South by Southwest, where it got, ironically, very loud critical praise for such a silent movie. Leading up to its U.S. debut wide, like I said, April 6th. Produced by Platinum Dunes, who have been responsible for The Purge and all its sequels, Ouija, etc., movies of that ilk. Distributed by Paramount, but who cares about any of this because we all want to talk numbers and critical reception, so let's get into that. Mm. This has been a very, very well-received movie.
Yes.
8.2 IMDb rating on 24,000-plus reviews, which, if that were to hold its score, would tie it for a 105th highest-ranked movie in IMDb history of all time, along the lines of Scarface, Metropolis, Yojimbo, and Up. I don't know if we're talking that quality of film here, but that's where it's ranked.
Yeah, keep talking.
97% Rotten Tomato critical score on 188 critical reviews, the breakdown being 182 of those positive to 6 negative. Average of 8.3 out of 10 critical rating. That's high. Mm. 87% audience score and 6,700-plus reviews, averaging 4.3 out of 5. That's high. 82 Metascore from Metacritic on 49 reviews.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's high. 3 perfect 100 scores and a low score of 2 separate 63s. That's high. It sits at 12th for 2018 releases by Metascore right now. Interestingly, 1 point higher than Isle of Dogs, but as horror movies go, it is still 6 points lower than the pace car that is the horror movie Hereditary, which will be coming out wide over the summer.
June, yeah.
And so the movie was released, A Quiet Place came out, and it casually just laid waste to the box office on its opening weekend. A $17 million listed budget for this film, it's managed to rake in $71 million in the 3 days it's been wide so far. $50 million domestically, $21 million internationally. Its $50 million domestic number, were it to be taken out of theaters this very moment, would already have it as the 12th highest grossing film of 2018, with conservative estimates that it's going to make a shit ton more. A shit ton more dollars.
So the Super Bowl commercial did a lot for it.
Yes.
Like you said, a strong showing at Southwest. Something else interesting I found was that a huge social media campaign went into this movie. Just under 52 million views on its social media, hyping this thing up. So that I thought
for
that was
for perspective, we said the Avengers trailer was, 250 million on YouTube? The highest YouTube video of all time? Or one of the highest YouTube videos of all time? So...
so a fifth of that. So we got a big movie.
Yeah, it's a big number. Why is it here? You know, we talk about, is it an Oscar candidate? Well, thus far, the only Oscar property, we've said this before, we've had in cinemas to take seriously, has been Black Panther. We've covered that in our two-part episode, a non-spoiler review and a spoiler review, episodes 42 and 43, if you want to go back and look at that. But Christopher Tapley at Variety got the ball rolling on this one. He wrote an article that just came out yesterday, Sunday, April 8th, comparing A Quiet Place's Meta rating score and box office successes with last year's movies. He mentioned Shape of Water being a fantasy film. He mentions Darkest Hour and where it did. Yeah. Okay. So he's kind of got that ball rolling. So if you hear it being an Oscar mention, you can know that that's where it started with Variety. And that's why we're reviewing it here today. We think this has a chance, much in the same vein. You know, we told you last episode it was Veronica and it was Annihilation. We could see whether it's best foreign film, best... something to do with the cinematography, the cinematics, the set design. We touched on all those in different ways. This one has a couple things that people are very high on it for different categories we'll touch on, but you may not get the glowing recommendation and the happy-go-lucky, oh my God, go out and see this from the two of us.
It's going to be a first for us in the sense that it's a blockbuster movie that we isolated for a quote-unquote movie event where we don't love it.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a surprise. Because the ones we've done before, other than Cloverfield Paradox, was kind of surprising.
Which wasn't an Oscar movie, yeah, sure.
We've gushed over.
I'm going to come off and say I'm pretty sure I'm higher on this than you are. But we're going to get into it. We're going to see. We'll do battle and see how we stack up against John Krasinski. Spoiler alert, not well.
I think there's a lot of feel-good stories about this movie, especially after all the backlash against Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot, about the disabled actors.
Oh, having the disabled, yeah.
So you have a deaf actor.
And especially with how the screenplay goes towards the end with the deafness, absolutely.
And that's a really, really strong element that they can tout come Oscar time.
Without question.
It's also a feel-good movie because it's a husband and wife team. You know, you have the director / writer / co-star and the star of the movie, Emily Blunt, the one who's carrying this box office. The two of them are a team in real life as well. So that's a feel-good story.
Box Office Mojo is hysterical because they have rankings for literally every aspect you can come up with. They have a ranking for on-screen, off-screen couple and where it ranks monetarily.
Okay.
All movies that involving people, couples that made a film together on screen while they were a couple off screen. I think this one's 12th right now all time for an on screen, off screen couple movie.
I would have said higher. I guess it'll finish higher.
Yeah.
But Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman, Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie, those are the recent ones I can remember.
Jolie!
Oh, God. All right. So what were our expectations going in, Mike? I tried to temper my own.
We're going to be on the same page as this, yeah.
I tried to. I honestly tried to temper them. But after all the glowing reviews came out, after all the Twitter hype train that was just going off the rails, I couldn't help but get totally overhyped for this movie. And that's how I went in. So you can judge me based on that fact. I had huge expectations.
I don't know if this is an NBC family type thing, an NBC network thing, but Chris Pratt put a video on Instagram yesterday.
Right.
Recording while driving on a freeway in traffic.
Oh, God.
Saying, oh, I shouldn't be doing this. You got to go see A Quiet Place. It's the greatest movie of all time. Oh, my God. I can't remember. Again, I don't know if these two are friends in real life or if it's, I don't know, beyond me. But I can't remember the last time I saw so many celebrities gushing over a movie that they weren't involved with directly.
Sure.
And maybe it's a credit to John Krasinski being so well-liked, because he is well-liked. I mean,
sure.
He's tight with Jimmy Kimmel. He's tight with all the NBC people. He's obviously made a name for himself outside of The Office, starring in 13 Hours and had a part in Detroit as an attorney. He's been in established stuff and has kind of taken roles that have totally separated himself from the Jim Halpert dryly panning, deadpanning to the camera.
Yes, he has. And this one does, you know, more work towards that end.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Emily Blunt is a bona fide movie star at this point.
100%.
She is box office catnip for a lot of people. She's doing a great job, and she does a great job in this one. We'll get into that in a second. So, Mike, I'm curious, what was your theater-going experience like here?
I went to your favorite movie theater, Podunk Inc. It was me. I thought it was just going to be me. First of all, I was the only person in the building. Got my own popcorn, rang my own ticket.
It's just a money laundering
operation.
It's
literally two guys standing at the counter just watching the door as you come in. It was me. I thought it was just going to be me in the theater, but a couple other people. I think it was me and like five other people when the movie got
going. They only accept cash?
Yes, or favors. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Now, were those people eating popcorn and drinking soda?
It was relatively silent, so I got the full effect of what the movie probably needed to be. What about you?
That was something I was a little worried about. Like, I was worried about people eating around me.
Right.
And that was not something that I should have been worried about. They actually played the score kind of loud, and they played the sound effects kind of loud enough where it kind of drowned out all of the munching and all the...
Yeah, you didn't... The idea that, oh my God, my theater ruined this movie. I've seen it a couple times on Twitter. It's a little overblown. It's a movie. You're going to hear what needs to be heard.
Well, I also very deliberately avoided you watching this movie with you. Now, I went with my brother because I knew you're just going to do all the Peter Griffin stuff. You're just going to want to get a rise out of me.
Lawrence, whose pipe organ is this?
And you're going to be loud. But my brother was very good. And I told him at the beginning of the movie, I was like, please don't yell at the screen.
If you make a sound, find a ride home. Is that what you said?
But at the end of the movie, well, he was my ride. But at the end of the movie, he was like, he just couldn't buy. He bottled up for too long, and at the end of the movie, he's like, "Just shoot it!" And it made the whole place laugh. And there was this, another scene where he always laughs at ridiculous times, or he laughed. This wasn't a ridiculous time. We'll get into it, spoilers, but he laughed at a scene. Again, everybody followed suit. He's like the trendsetter of the world,
right,
when
yeah,
it comes to
movies.
He's
the leader now.
My brother Dave, and of course
he is Negan. Yeah, he's established himself as dominant.
So that happened, but I was surprised in a packed house. I did not feel, you know, overwhelmed by the surround noise of this movie. They did a good enough job with the sound.
Nobody
had
only the bottom of a Coke left throughout the entirety of the film. So
I did not want to punch the guy who had. Yeah, I didn't realize. I was blissfully ignorant of that guy.
Yeah, I think it does help. I mean, you know, you just made the sentence and you proved that that doesn't really matter what's going on around you. The silence is nice, but like we're saying here, you're going to hear what you need to hear and you're going to get the mood of it.
I guess production values.
So this is interesting, right? You go online, you're going to hear everything about how wonderful sound was used or the lack of sound. Can you have something nominated for sound mixing and sound editing that has so few sounds in it? Because a lot of this movie is in relative silence.
It's like Dave Grohl says, it's the space between the notes.
Right, yeah. It's what you don't see. It's what the words that aren't there that matter. Yeah.
The sound is terrific, though, when they emphasize things like they said.
I totally agree.
You know, the dice rolling on the table, the soft dice and the all the little sounds that they allow. That's fine.
A great job, I think, of using the sound to set the terror of the movie, because there's not a lot of jump scares in this. So if you're looking for a jump scare movie, I'm not sure that this is one. There are a couple that did freak me out, but even something where the lamp turns over when they are playing the Monopoly game. Like, we see that in the preview. We saw that it's well established,
sure.
But still, when it happened, it scared the hell out of me.
Yeah, I will say that I have respect for the marketing, because the first couple sequences of the film were heavily marketed. And I think that's a plus
they
for
really
the movie.
Were.
We talked about it with Inglourious Basterds. Basically, Tarantino had the trailer of one of his first scenes introducing the Bastards as basically the key marketing campaign of it all.
Gives you familiarity. You know where you are. Yeah.
But it's also a mark of decent writing, or at least a clear premise, which this movie does have. I mean, this is a super high concept.
Yes.
And the highest of concepts, especially when you look back at how Beck and Woods marketed the darn thing, just on a 15-page treatment to get some momentum going. This is something laudable. It's something praiseworthy that they were able to do.
Laudable is a nice word.
I guess my brain went there.
You almost came with notes today or something.
The visual effects are pretty darn good as well, I would say. I like the creature effects. These things were startling. They move fast. They sold me on being realistic looking enough, even though they're kind of a blur for most of the movie.
Especially on the heels of things that we reviewed in the Netflix pod, like Annihilation and The Ritual. I know you were friendlier with Annihilation's Beast than I were.
This is a cut above.
But yeah, I think the creatures in this, the monster in this, looked better than those, yeah.
The cinematography is very strong. I mean, it's a beautifully shot movie. They really do justice to upstate New York, I would say. I mean, I was surprised that that's where it was filmed.
And that's where the movie takes place as well.
Really,
at least somewhere
great.
In New York, for sure. And that kind of surprised me that they were able to hammer that home so repeatedly through a lot of the work for setting the scene there was done through headlines and newspapers flying around that you catch, and that was kind of cool, I thought.
Another mark in Krasinski's favor there.
For sure.
Anything else on the production values, Mike?
You know, the score, as far as that goes, there wasn't really much of one, at least not a memorable one that I think. The sound is really the star of this, at least as far as the production values go. It's what you hear. It's what causes you fright. It's what sets the tone. And you are given the prolonged silence that really lets you appreciate some of the sounds that do happen. There's a big scene early on involving a waterfall. And
yep.
John Krasinski's able to speak in a normal tone for the first time all movie then, and it kind of takes you back. You're like, oh, shit, yeah, that's what he sounds like.
Sure, and if they actually re-recorded all these sounds, sound editing is going to be a big, you know, it's going to be a player in sound editing.
I'm
going to
think it will get a nomination for at least one of the sound categories just because of how unique the approach is.
And how featured it all is.
Yeah,
makes sense. So performances, Mike, I thought Emily Blunt is the star of the movie. she gets all the key scenes where she has to emote like crazy, being the vulnerability of their kids, being the vulnerability of her own character at times, where she's horrified and she still has a ton of agency, where she's trying to make things happen to save her and her family. I thought she was great. I wish they wrote her a little bit better, and I'm going to get into that.
I have such a problem with one of the...
In a minute.
Yeah, mine will be safe for spoilers because it's tough to do otherwise, but I'm with you as far as the performance, her emotions, the way she pulls off one scene in particular, which is my best scene, which is really kind of one of the two climaxes of the film. Oh my God, I was on the edge of my seat, and it was all due to her.
Sure.
So without question, I think if you hear best actress talk, and she's involved, I think it's definitely warranted. If we had a top five list at this point, she'd be at or near the top for me.
Yes, correct. And I thought Krasinski had his good and his bad moments. I thought the bad moments where he shows, like, he does, like, that dumb face where he should be, you know, getting, you know.
He's an adorable face. America fell in love with it.
But it's a dumb, freaking bimbo face.
Yeah, it's a great face, but it's a stupid face.
It's a stupid face. I hate his face in those scenes.
We can take those pot shots because he's a lot better looking than us, with or without the beard in his face, so that's good.
Yeah, this is what bimbos would do in the apocalypse. I'm going to flush that idea out to its fullest. But these kids can really act as well. At least two out of the three kids.
Which one did you have a problem with?
The younger boy is not great. I mean, the youngest boy is fine for his role. I don't love the middle child.
Of the older and the middle child, the middle boy.
I thought Millicent Simons is very, very good.
I am with you. It's amazing. We're on the same page. I'm with you.
Wow. And something that they mentioned in a lot of the promotional videos is the way she signs is a very teenage, rebellious way of signing.
Cool. I didn't know that.
That's kind of cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
This is why He Won't Get Far on Foot kind of had the backlash against it. And it is time. It's more than time for disabled people to play disabled roles. Why shouldn't they? Obviously, Millicent Simons is a young girl. I mean, she's has to be, what, 12, 13 in this movie?
Right. And it's not her first role either. She also plays a deaf character in Wonderstruck.
Right.
Which is much more frustrating than this movie because every single time they sign something, they have to speak it a second later. And
which
it's just really frustrating. Like, just go
stupid,
one or the other. Just do sign language with subtitles. You don't have to just... It just gets so redundant, especially after an hour and a half.
Especially after this performance with the actress so young. You're going to have a hard time convincing me you can't find a disabled actress to fill these roles. Because she crushed it.
Crushed it.
I mean, she's not going to be up for anything. She's no Emily Blunt in this movie. But she has so much riding on her performance at so many different points throughout this movie.
Oh, yeah.
And she brings the sadness. She brings the excitement. She brings the leadership. She was awesome.
Terrific. So I want to get in a couple things about the script, pre-spoilers. Are you ready for that?
Big writer. This is your moment.
All right. Look, this here is plot hole country.
Oh, yeah.
We kind of got...
You could ride a tank through some of these plot holes.
We got frustrated watching the trailers, right? There's a couple big things.
And we joked about it here.
Yes.
You know, we talked about eating a potato chip too loud, farting, you know. It's true.
All those accidental problems that could happen with any of these characters that don't happen for the first half of the movie, that happen in the second half of the movie, just like all of a sudden they're accident prone.
It's a problem because the rules, right? Every horror movie needs these elusive rules to be established. The rules are established so well in this one by Krasinski. Like, these are hard and fast. You do this, you live. You do this, you die. And they're repeated almost ad nauseum throughout the film. And then, like you said, they'll happen one time, nothing will happen. They'll happen another time, something will.
So here's going to be my thesis statement for this whole review.
You want a drum roll first? You want me to set you up in any way?
How come they don't soundproof anything? Soundproof any room, soundproof any bunker, soundproof any...
Well, they do.
Thing
they
in
do.
There, that, with a mattress. Well, but I'm going to get into more of this.
Remember the kids in the montage? You're painting and putting magazine covers up and stuff on the walls?
All right. That's barely soundproofing it. I'm talking about... This guy is researching things throughout this movie. The father, Krasinski, Lee Abbott. He is researching things throughout the film.
Yes.
Just so happens to, you know, be important later. why don't you just research some soundproofing? How is that not on your radar?
So many hours in a day. I mean, look what he did with the farm.
But he's able to go, whatever they're doing, they're researching it at the library. They're before the internet went down, they researched it. Whatever they're doing, he's able to research. So you give that as something that's important to his character, and he's researching some complicated stuff. You can't research how to put foam in a room. You're going out for supply runs every day, just
but they're
frolicking.
In the middle of nowhere.
They're frolicking into the wilderness to get supply runs. You can't put some styrofoam underneath the doors.
I don't know that a guitar center is anywhere nearby for them, though. You know,
like, but you could find foam. You could find styrofoam. You can makeshift soundproofing. We've thought about it.
It's a fine gripe.
We find ways to do it for our podcast here, and then I don't know, maybe it's bothering me more because we're sound oriented
because this is an argument that we've had in the past. Yeah. This is just a way of Mike to get more aggression out on me through John Krasinski.
No, because we sound great lately, so. But listen, in the trailers, yes, we said a major problem is, why do these parents let their kids straggle behind,
just run around?
Why do they let them frolic around the grounds? Mm-hmm. Because all those things that are accident prone, just like anybody would be accident prone. I mean, they could stub their toe. Mm-hmm. They could do whatever, like they do in the second half of the movie. In the first half of the movie, we're meant to think that they, obviously, they're doing it right. That they've been well-trained and well, whatever. It's nonsense to me that a regular parent in modern-day society would hold a kid's hand walking anywhere, especially a kid who's 3 years old. 4 years old.
Yes.
They're in a country of monsters. Monsters. And this kid is straggling 20 meters behind. It's absurd. It's absurd. It was absurd in the trailers. It's absurd in the movie.
I'll do you one better that crossed my mind. If you live in a place where you can't crunch leaves and you got to be that cognizant and leave a sand path
Yeah.
Why aren't you moving? Go south, man.
It's just like, this is just pretty bimbo idiot ignorance here, because all the smart, ugly people are in bunkers right now. that's my hypothesis about this movie. That's my reading between the lines. Because this
you have
beautiful
so many
family.
Aggressions against John Krasinski's beautiful, beautiful face.
They're
movie.
All beautiful. They're all beautiful bimbos.
He's got a stupid face, and he's not ugly enough to hide.
He's correct. You're correct.
Yes, all right.
Because these idiots are just frolicking around the grounds the entire movie, and you're just like, WTF? Why are they allowed to do this? Why aren't they, just in more of a bunker scenario? Why don't they have a backup bunker? Like, I would get it. All right, have a backup bunker and just allow the kids to get out some with all these precautions. You take these precautions like responsible parents in a world of monsters would do, okay? Mm-hmm. They don't do that. They don't, like we complimented the MCU for, they don't explain away the obvious things that the audience would be saying about these characters.
So let me devil's advocate that, because I've thought about it, and this is the best I could do. It's not great, I'll give you that. So the problems with making noise and how normal people would live, those are all kind of laid out in the opening of the movie, at the beginning of the movie at least. It's like, it's basically, I got it as them saying, look, we know there's issues. We get it. But this is the world we're in. Just leave your disbelief at the door. Take this trip with us and enjoy it for what it is. Because I think to have this type of concept, you called it an extremely high concept.
Right.
Of course it's Swiss cheese. You didn't even mention my two biggest issues.
I got more.
I'm sure. There's a billion of them. So I think you have to make sacrifices and you have to kind of beg the audience's forgiveness. So they address kind of the layout of what the characters are willing to do for defense at the beginning of the movie. And then they are kind of saying, look, just take it for what it is. Let's go on this trip together and just accept these as fact.
Emily Blunt and John Krasinski recently came out and were like, yeah, we don't need Marvel Cinema. We don't need to be in that. But they should have learned from the MCU. They should have learned
from
good blockbuster filmmaking, because they do this in Stranger Things. You explain away the obvious objection as a writer, as a filmmaker. You explain that away.
Yeah, the easiest counter to what I just said is that this movie's only an hour and a half, so they had at least a half hour.
All it takes is a line of dialogue. I'm saying
they had at least a half hour. They could have entered more stuff to address these problems.
All it takes is a shot of their safety bunker. Right. They got all these contrived backup plans that
underground
don't have
bunkers
to do
that
with
have no no security not, whatsoever.
Yeah, come on. So the other devil's advocacy that I can get into a little bit that I'm actually going to refute later is that I realize that this is all one big metaphor. Like we criticized Annihilation for not being more allegorical.
Yes.
My guess is that if we really analyze this movie, this is more of a one-to-one, this equals that, this equals this, in terms of symbolism and what it means. This is more of an allegory. And I think listening to some promotional videos, some promotional interviews, I think they're trying to go for some of that. Like this is a metaphor for modern parenting in modern times. You know, anything that you hear in the news is dangerous. Anything, you know, all the sounds that you make in the zeitgeist is dangerous. I get what they're trying to go for.
All right.
The problem is, I just keep thinking of Peter Griffin and from Family Guy crunching a potato chip jokes. I just keep thinking of what if they farted jokes. That's what my mind is doing throughout
alone.
This movie.
You're not alone.
So I keep saying WTF, and the plot for me feels so contrived that it's really hard to suspend my disbelief throughout. So when a real problem arises, I get angry at it.
Yeah.
So
I was going to save this for the spoiler section, but I have two big gripes, and I'll do one of them now because we're kind of hitting on it.
Sure.
And it goes along with what you just said. The kids are playing a board game. You remember playing games with your brothers growing up? You guys never yelled accidentally or, like, raised your voice?
That was the loudest my house ever got.
like my mom coughs all the time, so she's just a goner.
That was the loudest my college dorm room ever got.
Did the entire U.S. Army have, like, irritable bowel syndrome? Like, could they not stop farting and passing gas, and that's why they just got wiped? Where are they? And like, did the...
They're too loud.
What happens when you get sick? When you're vomiting? I snore. I snore and I sleep. I'm dead.
You're dead. You're immediately dead.
And there's so many of those type things. So you said, like, your mind went there. I think everyone... All I could do for the first half hour was think of ways in which I and my loved ones would immediately be killed. We would not survive in this universe.
Savagely dead.
And of course, and that's what I mean when I say I think they just threw their hands up. Because if you address one or two of those, you have to address all of them, and there's two men.
That's possible, and I'll give you credit for that devil's advocacy. I guess we'll go some final thoughts. What do you think overall?
I think, and the biggest problem overall that we had is what we just talked about, and another one I'll get into. But I think if you leave those plot holes at the door, if you take just what's on the screen in a vacuum and just judge that,
Chris Pratt. Coming from the Jurassic World movies, I mean, compare it, like you said, Swiss cheese. I mean, I don't know what the metaphor is, but the plot holes in Jurassic World are much bigger
and wider than
this. So he's probably like, whoa, that's
kind
of smart.
It's an audacious attempt. It's an artsy movie, kind of. You can appreciate for certain what's in front of you on the screen. Yeah, you have to suspend your disbelief an awful lot.
Right.
But if you can, if you're capable of doing that, you can see a very good movie here.
I still manage to enjoy long sequences, long stretches of this movie. I truly did. So I get where a lot of the hype is.
I agree. Yeah, that's a good way.
And I think we both kind of feel that way because we both like begrudgingly give it grades. And my initial grade that I gave it before writing up the prep for this episode was 2 points higher, which is going to make you...
Oh, so you just got more furious and said,
I just got more furious as I was like, I can't give it such a high grade if I have these, you know, strong problems
that's
with it.
Another thing I wanted to bring up too, and I was thinking about it, it's not something I wrote down, but I can't remember having so many glaring issues with a movie and still being so high on it. So that's a credit to Krasinski, it's a credit to the screenwriting, credit to Blunt's performance and the kids' performance. It's a credit to everyone that, yeah, there are these problems and they are so obvious,
right?
And they, you know, they're not addressed at all, but at the same time, you got a good movie.
However,
Stephen A. Smith in the building,
however. This is an example for me of why we started this podcast kind of in the first place. Like, we had a problem with a lot of the movies that the critics would just
uniformly praise.
Tomato meter life in terms of that percentage being equated to the quality of the movie, when in fact all it's really saying is that it's a better than average movie,
it's
right?
It's a good horror movie.
It's a good horror movie. But when you hear 97%, you're thinking great movie. I mean, unfortunately, this for me was not a great movie. It is still a good movie, and I'll reflect that in my grade.
Well,
let's still do a watch.
Let's do grades prior. It's definitely a watch. You have to guarded watch. Don't go in expecting a 97, which is the point you're making.
I went in expecting an A.
Right, so did I, and that's why we have these
issues. And that may be why, after all the buzz, after all the hype, mm-hmm. after all the reviews, the glowing reviews, and from the Chris Pratts of the world to all the critics that I listened to and read. So. It's a watch for me, but it's not an A, and you want it to do grades.
Yeah,
now.
What do you have for a grade?
I have it a B, 86.
Well, right. I'm 87 B plus, so I did Veronica as an 88 during our Netflix review, so I think as a horror movie, Veronica is more worth your while. Yes, it's subtitles. Yeah, I don't think you're going to go wrong with either one is my point. If you want a night out at the movies, this is going to fill that for you. If you want to stay in, Veronica can do that if you're looking for a horror movie either way. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's all I got. I think that's...
Ready to spoil? Want to dance?
Ready to spoiler, ready to
dance. All right,
let's
dance and see on the other side. Spoilers ahead. Spoilers ahead!
This is a spoiler warning.
Spoilers. 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 Spoilers.
Mike, and Oscar Sprint, spoilers!
I said pipe down! This is the spoiler section for A Quiet Place. If you are not looking for the spoilers of what goes on in John Krasinski's latest, if you're looking just for the specs, the box office, the critical reception, why Mike and I have some issues with this movie, go back and listen to the first half hour or so of this recording. That'll get you where you need to go. But we are doing spoilers of A Quiet Place. I feel like you are chomping at the bit to say something because you're moving an awful lot. Go ahead.
So back to the trailer problems. Remember we said during the Super Bowl trailer that why does that little boy get hold of such a noisy toy? Why was that allowed? They did. They answered that question at least. So I will give them credit for answering that question to my liking. Why do the kids straggle behind the grown-ups? That question is not answered well to my liking. They try a little bit when the mother regrets not holding him. But come on, they let their kids just go all around the neighborhood, all around their grounds. And these are just a couple of little freaking kids. They're little.
Yeah. And the oldest one is like 11.
And there's a lot of accidental sounds at the end. Remember when the kid like is running away and he runs into the silo?
Into a tire.
Into a tire or whatever he ran into that made a big clunking sound. Like he could have done that on a Wednesday.
So for those of you who haven't seen it or are interested, those of you who have seen it, just a means of recap, the big reveal, there isn't really one, but the big plot of A Quiet Place is that there are these creatures stalking anything that makes a noise. They go and automatically kill it. They can't see. They only go by sound, and they have supersonic hearing, and that's why you have to stay silent all the time. And so John Krasinski has done his best to secure their home, which is on a farm, and the big reason they're having such problems is that one of these creatures killed one of their kids, and that's how the movie starts. You see the five of them. It's John Krasinski, Emily Blunt, and their three children walking back to their home.
Which I applaud them for doing, by the way, killing their kids.
That was awfully audacious. Yeah, I know I said that before, but yeah, that was awesome.
I mean, I know fans that would have just walked out right then and there.
But they handled. I mean, it was handled really well.
It was handled really well.
And it chooses motivation later in the film.
It showed you the reality of the world.
The seriousness.
So
the littlest kid has a rocket that he was told not to play with, but he ends up putting batteries back inside it because they're at a general store at the beginning of the movie.
Yes.
Makes a noise. John Krasinski tries to get his kid. creature comes in and kills the kid.
A lot of those creature sequences were awesome. I will say that. I thought the interplay between the creatures hunting them down, how the creatures killed.
It's
how
good to have capable enemies, but yeah. even more they important, I thought, it was John Krasinski's a capable protagonist.
Yes.
He's not an idiot. You know, I mean, there are plot holes aplenty in this movie, like we talked about, but he does his part to be protector of his family.
So let me tell you wisely. Why he's an idiot.
Yes.
For not soundproofing anything, for not having a bunker, like I said. No.
Well, he does try to have a bunker, though.
But it's not a soundproof bunker.
It's not a good bunker.
It's not a good bunker at all. He has one mattress protecting the top, where that's where the baby's supposed to cry. I mean, they actually had a something for the baby, even though it's not enough for a baby. The gas.
When you're ready to talk about that baby, I'm here.
Okay,
I got issues.
Me too. But Mike, was the working title for A Quiet Place really Fantastic Beasts and the Crimes of Horrible Parents? I was waiting for a while to say that.
You said this in the non-spoiler section, so you think this is all one big allegory for being a good parent, huh?
No, I don't think that's necessarily the allegory. I guess it's parenting through troubled times or whatever. But there are terrible parents in a crisis. Terrible!
Well, one of them is extremely pregnant, which is its own ball of wax.
And I have a major problem with that.
Oh,
that's
me
my
too.
Next one.
That's my number one complaint. It's obviously a life different. I think the biggest sin of this movie is telling us how far after the whatever happened this is. They make it very clear that this is day 473 of this infestation or whatever happened. I think if you say this is like day 90, a lot of those types of sins can be forgiven. If this had just happened a month or two ago and they're just learning how to figure these things out and how to live through this, then that's one thing. But this is over a year.
That's why they should begin in media res. They shouldn't begin. Yeah, I mean, if she was pregnant going way back, then that's fine. Everything's fine. Solved.
If she's pregnant before this happens, then yeah, why the fuck are you having a kid?
It's so ridiculous. I mean, maybe don't reproduce during the apocalypse when
it's fine. We have a wooden box we can put the baby in.
And we a limited supply
that
of
way,
whatever.
When it dies, we already have a casket for it.
Yeah. Limited supply of the gas for the baby to shut it up.
It's the stupid. That is the biggest scene. Now, cards on the table, it's responsible also for my favorite scene.
Yes.
Which was where Emily Blunt earns her money, and that's the scene where Emily Blunt,
her
one of
giving
those
birth
creatures,
during
comes in the house, her water breaks, and she's got to walk the line between not making a sound, giving birth to this newborn kid, having a creature right outside. It's the bathroom where she is giving birth in the tub.
And they are very clever with the whole fireworks thing, with the lights. I liked
it,
all
again,
of that
it shows intelligence
lot.
Of the character's protagonist, yes.
I like
and she
all that
is
a lot.
Acting her brains out.
But
she is awesome in that scene.
You know, maybe don't reproduce and bring a screaming infant into the world where monsters hunt by sound.
I can't believe that was made. That's the only thing you know about these creatures. you are told these protagonists have no idea what these creatures' weaknesses are. And in fact, one of the only things you know about them is that A, there's three of them. B, they are fast. C, they hunt by sound. Let's have a kid.
Yeah, maybe when you're going on all those supply runs, you go and you get some rubbers, some morning after pills, which I'm sure there's still a few left.
Oh my
maybe,
gosh.
You know, you wear a helmet to the big game there, John Krasinski. You don't get one past the goalie there, pal. What are you doing?
I can't. I texted you in the middle of the movie. That's when I texted you because they hint at it for the first half hour or so.
Wrap
that
it up,
she,
Mike.
They don't say that she's pregnant, and then the big reveal is that she actually is. That the stupidest decision in movie history and screenwriting history? What person under those circumstances would get? And again, if the event happened 2 months ago and she's been pregnant for 8 months, that's excusable. The event happened 470 days ago.
Right.
So unless it's a 490-day pregnancy.
No, she literally X'd out the part on the calendar where she's giving birth, not prematurely, but a couple weeks early.
Due date, yes.
Yeah, she's given birth early. That's why he thinks he has time to go and take his son. Now, this is a major plot hole that really bugs me. Okay? Why?
Oh, by the way, we're doing worse scenes first.
Yeah. Why does he refuse to allow his daughter to come with him on his nature hike to teach the son all the ways of why do you get that? How do you explain that to me? Because I don't get that.
No, I get your gripe with it. I think.
Oh.
I think.
High five.
She needed to. I think Krasinski really wanted her to stay back and help a very, very pregnant Emily Blunt, even though she doesn't.
But why doesn't he take his older daughter instead of his son.
Right. I just think there was they tried having that equate to the guilt.
So
from the last kid.
Yeah, but that's
dying.
Just so contrived.
It didn't work for me either.
He can just tell the daughter, "Listen, protect your mother. You're coming after the baby's born. That's you're going to be your turn to learn all of my secrets, all right? And of the wilderness that it's going to that are going that's going to help you if I die." You can it's one line of dialogue.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. More concisely than I don't think it worked with me either. I just think that's what they were going for. I think it fell short of the mark.
Yeah, how does he not just communicate that to her? It's just so absurd. So now that's contrivance problem number one. Well, number 17. Contrivance problem number 18 is she is the most convenient deaf character in the history of movies because her deafness and his making a hearing aid, which again, you can research how to cure a deaf child, but you can't research how to soundproof anything in your house. Well, you can't
You can't do both at once, certainly.
No, you can, apparently not.
You got a lot of problems with it. Styrofoam. He's just like, throw up some goddamn styrofoam.
He's like the goddamn tinkering in the basement coming up with this.
I'm okay. You're not okay with that?
I'm not okay with that.
He's looking out for his daughter's safety. Everyone else is up to their own devices. He figures it's more.
I'm okay with the fact that but I'm not okay with the fact that he's researching one thing and not the other. Like,
I can even make the argument that he knows that these things can enter any place they want to.
So let's play Monopoly.
Soundproofing would only do so much anyway, because if things come in, they're going to have to figure out a way to get out where there is no soundproofing. So, you know, he's making his choices.
You can make rules about good bunkers and bad bunkers. I agree with you. You can a good bunker has an escape plan.
I'm trying, John. I'm really trying, John. No.
But the fact that you don't have anything soundproof to help yourself out. I mean, why don't they live near the goddamn waterfall?
My God. How, if you establish the rules that these things go towards any noise and blah, blah, blah.
Why don't all the monsters live by
Right next to the water? Why aren't they there all the time?
I was getting ready for that sequence where the father thinks he's taking his son to the waterfall where they can communicate and all the monsters would descend.
That's what I thought the crescendo was.
They would be there, yeah.
So,
and the daughter was going to follow them. And the mother was going to be dealing with, like, I was rewriting the movie in my head.
And okay, so we discover that the hearing aid, the radio frequency, injures these beasts, and that's what leads to Emily Blunt being able to shotgun them because they're so disoriented.
Which was a fumbling, difficult thing to do, correct?
You're telling me the U.S. Army never looked at, let's see, we have these monsters that go by sound. They never decided to play with radio waves before they all farted and were killed.
A fucking dog whistle would conquer this movie.
You're so right. So, yes, there are glaring issues.
But here's another. I loved the last shot where she cocks the shotgun.
Awesome.
Ready.
Awesome.
I love that. And I forgive that last shot for the obvious thought that comes into my head afterwards. It was a messy kill, right? Where she had to wait for the exact right moment for that thing to open its shield, open its carapace head into all those little openings to just
personal
shoot it,
blinds, yeah.
Right, to shoot it in the ear hole or whatever to kill it, right?
It got shotgunned in the face, yeah.
Number one, how many shots does a shotgun have? Not many, correct?
Sure.
All of those monsters throughout the movie kill quickly.
Yeah, they're coming in. They're coming in hot.
They're coming in hot, and there's multiple bogeys.
And we're shown that.
At least two. More than one is the problem.
Well, they know there's three, right? That's established. So they know they're thinking they only have two more to deal with anyway.
And they kind of showed the other two descending upon them, correct?
So hopefully they only have two more to deal with, and they can be stunned. Is the idea
maybe like?
That's the idea. I mean,
that's the idea. Maybe she'll get away with that. And fine, I guess by ending the scene on that last shot, we're going to assume.
They don't show you it's the end of the scene where those monsters horribly kill that family. Easily and horribly kill them.
She has the one shot to kill the one, and then the other one just wreaks havoc. Immediately knocks into the sound thing, a majigger, and then they're helpless.
Deaf girl, dead.
They're all dead.
Now, again. We're saying all these ridiculous things, and we are two people that gave this a B and B plus.
Correct.
So there's a lot of good here. The scene, the silo scene where the kids are fighting through the corn water, basically.
Love it.
Great scene. Last scene, we said great scene. Emily Blunt's pregnancy scene.
The birth sequence.
An all-time scene. She is going ham.
Awesome.
She's so good. There is enough worth your money here. And there's enough, I would even say, if you want to put some of these up for Oscar contention, I'm not going to argue with them.
Right. The birth sequence was my best scene by far.
It should be everyone's, yeah.
Now, I do have a worse scene that I haven't mentioned yet.
Oh, my God.
I haven't mentioned this yet. I just watched The Dark Knight.
We have to cancel John and Emily.
I just watched The Dark Knight, where you remember Two-Face when he becomes Two-Face. He has a scream, correct? And what is over the scream? You don't hear his scream. You don't hear Aaron Eckhart's scream in The Dark Knight. You hear that loud pool filter.
Right.
The soundtrack
Light
over
inception.
That scene, which it works so well. I see this in a lot of movies, and it's typically movies that I like don't show a character completely losing all their shit ears.
I really dislike where you're going with this. I might argue you.
In this movie, John Krasinski's self-sacrificial scream is on par with Patrick Chewing's same scream when he dunked on that little dude in the Snickers commercial. It is like, it's the worst scream. Okay. It made my brother laugh hysterically, which made me laugh, which made the whole theater laugh. I get it.
Listen.
A little bit, because he hasn't screamed in a while. But this is, this is the same scream, Michael, that Richard Pryor delivered in every one of his comedy specials. That scream plays for comedy. I don't blame my brother for laughing at it. It is a nonsense. He needs to practice his scream more, and he needed to have a better one ready. That is the silliest nonsense scream that they should have played soundtrack over it if they knew he was going to scream like that.
There's only one thing to do. You need to get married and have children. And we need to put them at risk, and you need to sacrifice yourself by screaming. And then when
I would
we
scream
hear,
better.
When we hear the sound you make, we can have a pitch for pitch
my death scream. My death scream would be better. I know it.
Listen, you have not said one thing I've disagreed with as far as gripes yet. That is an absurd complaint for this movie.
It made everybody laugh, Michael.
No, your brother made everybody laugh.
I can't even argue. But it was the same Patrick Chewing scream. It was. Watch the Patrick Chewing Snickers commercial
on
YouTube.
Do you watch that like once a week? Is that like your go to bed?
We just watched it for the basketball movies for like best basketball player commercial.
That was my first time seeing it in like 15 years.
Hey, Brian. It's freaking John Krasinski scream.
Your Patrick Ewing sounds suspiciously like your Kevin James doing Ray Romano.
It's because I'm a copycat of Richard Pryor, who always did that.
Oh, that's what you are.
Yes. Richard Pryor always had that, yeah. That was his white people voice. That was his dumb people voice. And then he would scream once in a while. It's hysterical.
Might be time for us to wrap this up.
Oh, my God. Yes, it is.
So, in closing, you have a decent movie here.
You still do.
Yes.
It's amazing to say that.
We took a while to kind of chop this down, and it's unfortunate that these holes do exist. Now, if you are willing to leave plot holes at the door, you're going to see a great movie. I don't think even doing that, though, gives you a 97, 98 movie. I don't see it.
Mike, how do you compare this movie to Get Out?
Right. It's not even close.
How do you compare it to The Shining? How do you compare it to...
It's not close.
Halloween.
Now, that said, it's in the upper echelon for horror movies because there are so many terrible horror movies.
Yeah, that's like, I don't know, it's like not a great
No, it's not, attribute. But I mean, like, you know, all-timers, is it better than Carrie?
Yeah, Carrie is another argument. Scream problem.
There's an argument to be made, yeah. Is it better?
Screams, wigs. I have a lot of pet peeves that are coming on to full display for all you folks.
I think other humans is where we can label all your...
religious debates in a movie. That Carrie has all three. Bad wigs, bad religious debates.
See by skip. Revolutionary, quote-unquote, horror movies. We can't say Get Out because obviously it's a different playing field. Don't Breathe, this movie, Cabin in the Woods.
I would see Don't Breathe. I would buy Cabin in the Woods, and I would skip this movie.
Wow,
again.
Really? You're that low on it. So that means by that, then you're
and
saying
Cabin
that,
in the Woods has some problems.
Well, that's why I put it in there. But yeah, by that, you're saying Don't Breathe and Cabin in the Woods. You had higher than 86s.
Yes.
All right. What? Hey.
Yes.
It's your world, man. I'm just
Don't Breathe. Don't Breathe was an A- for me, and Cabin in the Woods was a B+.
All right. Well, then
I just thought the comedy aspect of that made me laugh so freaking hard at the end.
Bradley Whitford in that is absolutely hysterical. He's hysterical. You're totally right.
He's got a niche now.
So, again, we've said it over and over. I don't know that you're going to get a lot of reviews that are this harsh on the movie, but it's authentic, if nothing else. We're telling you what we actually feel and what we saw and what we couldn't get out of our heads during the viewing.
Yes.
So if you're looking for another glowing review, no. We're not going to say that Emily Blunt isn't best actress worthy. She may be. We'll see as the year goes on. We're not going to say this doesn't get nominated for the sound categories. Maybe even the screenplay category. I wouldn't think so, but we'll see.
For me, sound categories and maybe a cinematography or visual effects if it's a weak year for it. But I don't see this coming through in any of the big seven. I would be surprised.
You don't think Emily Blunt gives Emily a chance?
I don't think she's going to get enough buzz. I think all the heavy hitter, quote-unquote, Oscar movies are going to come out. And her character didn't have enough meat to it. I just wonder if like,
out.
Her dialogue with her husband, even sign language involved, is terrible.
I just wonder if the Get Out effect is going to be, we have to have a horror movie every year, as opposed to what it should be, which is, look at what this fucking movie did in terms of race relations and of the moment.
This movie movements. Is not even close.
Oh, it's not the same. It's
to
not,
Get Out.
No, it's not.
In any way, shape, or form.
This is a horror movie. Get Out is a social statement. This is a horror movie.
Yeah, and if you argue this movie as a social statement is even close, I don't get it. I don't get that either. Maybe I'll have to watch it.
The one
thing,
and this is the allegory that I walked away with that I do want to highlight as a positive at the end, is how the quote unquote disability is treated, and it's basically a superpower because of how the hearing aid is treated at the end.
Well, I'll be honest with you, Mike. I didn't love Wonder Woman, but Wonder Woman was a groundbreaking film for so many audience members,
mm-hmm.
and it made a big difference for them that they loved it instead of just liking it, because it is a point of pride and a relief, just a profound relief that they finally got a hero, a feminist hero, for a superhero franchise that made $1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. So if this movie is, and she is a hero of this story, Millicent Simons.
You could even have it for both women, because the only men left in the movie are cowering in the corner protecting a baby, and the two people kicking ass and killing the monsters
are
the women.
But this, again, is back to my gripes against movie criticism, because why can't we put this movie in its proper place? Like, you and I both as movie critics said, this is like a BB+. Okay, it overcomes horrific plot holes that are undeniable in our minds. Undeniable. Why can't we just say this is a strong movie, it overcomes problems, but it's not a great movie? Everybody's like gushing over it like it's a great movie.
Well, that's the symptom of now. You know, everybody wants what they've just seen to be the biggest thing ever, and that's the
it's
side
great,
effect
it's
of now.
Great or terrible.
Right. So
or they're all bought and sold by real Hollywood.
I moan sometimes in my sleep. I'd be dead. So dead. I talk in my sleep. I'd go to sleep. I'd wake up dead. Well, that's it for us in our review of A Quiet Place, where Mike, and Oscar. You can catch us on social media. Hey, if you love this movie, if it is a 98 in your eyes, tell us about it and shout at us. We can have a nice little discourse back and forth. We want to hear from you for sure. If you don't think this is worth it, we want to hear that too. If you agree with us or you think it should be even lower, let us know. We're Mike, and Oscar on Facebook. Mike, and Oscar on what? I don't even know anymore. I've gone cross on Instagram. Good
Facebook.
Lord. Mike, and Oscar on Instagram. MMN Oscar on Twitter. Mike, and Oscar at gmail.com. Mike, and Oscar on Reddit. Website in the pipeline. That'll heat up at some point in the future.
Some point.
Maybe we'll just stop talking. No.
It's difficult.
It's going to come. We're proud of it. So let us know. You got anything to fill us in about this? If we're totally off base, you think we're totally right, we want to hear from you either way. Get at us on social media and through one of those channels, and we will be talking to you guys.
All right.
Anything to leave us out on?
I got nothing. I'm spent.
You'd be
I'm
dead.
Exhausted.
You just said those words. Dead.
Dead.
Reality sucks, guys. Keep watching movies with us. We'll catch you next time.
See ya.